Well, hello, friends. Mark DiMatteo coming at you with another brand new message going out to our Great Questions group. This is actually message number 37. The title is Considering Space Part 2. And today is the 21st of July, 2014. And as is normally the case, I'm excited about getting into this message and kind of continuing my review of this journey that I've been on for the majority of my life that is completely transformed it, and I trust it's going to positively impact, if it hasn't already. Trust me, you keep following along. I think it will, not because, again, of the messenger, but because of the power of the information that I've been able to learn and just accumulate over this the period of the studies that I've been on. But anyway, just really quickly before we get rolling, two important points. Number one, want to welcome the new folks that have connected with us since the last message went out. We continue to grow, and I'm excited about that, but I want to say welcome if this is your first official message. Number two, please remember that this is a chronologically ordered series, and as such, the messages build on each other, and they bring context and clarity to the ones that follow. So if you have not already heard the prior messages, consider doing so as soon as you have a convenient moment, as it will make your Great Questions journey with us far more pleasurable and profitable to you, because you'll have a better context and you'll understand where we've come from up to this point in this series of messages. Okay, so anyway, having said that, let's get rolling. Considering Space Part 2. And folks, actually in part one of this message, Considering Space Part 1, we began considering the second of the three fundamental building blocks of the cosmos. And of course, that one is space. We live in a space mass time continuum. We've already talked about the mass or matter component. Now we're dealing with space. And as we did so, and in particular, explored the current estimated dimensions of the overall cosmos, I'm sure it became readily apparent, although many of you probably had a pretty good idea that we lived in a pretty large universe, but it's quite apparent that this second universal cosmic component is, folks, extraordinarily vast, right? And in fact, you will recall as we wrapped up the previous message, we referred to the following definition that I'm going to repeat again. Space is the unlimited or incalculably great three-dimensional realm or expanse in which all material objects are located and all events occur. Kind of cool. Therefore, I also mentioned that I was being confronted. We are all being confronted, folks, with yet another, quote, unlimited or incalculably great, unquote, effect, which I knew, which everybody that's reflective of these types of things knows that must, that had to be accounted for. And folks, although space is obviously a little more abstract and intangible than matter is, than the atom is, I was still eager to examine it using my trusty X-frame and see what conclusions it might lead me to regarding the possible origin and continued existence of this particular cosmic component. And just as a quick reminder, X-frame is now my new shortened handle for examination framework, right? I'm sure you all remember that, talked about it in the last message. So, let's take a few moments and consider this grand effect of space in the light of the laws of our X-frame. And as we do so, I will share with you some of the conclusions that seemed rather apparent to me. To begin with, I now knew that due to the law of causality, okay, the law of cause and effect, that there had to be some kind of an adequate cause to account for the existence of the effect of space as well. Space is an effect, and therefore it requires a cause, an adequate cause, and we've already talked about that at length in prior messages. Furthermore, it followed on that since this effect is so grand, then its cause then must also be great, in fact, even greater. Next, let's consider space in light of the conditions required to produce any ordered structure. To begin with, we need to understand that space is essentially a three-dimensional construct. We alluded to this in the last message, but if this construct did not exist, there would technically be nowhere for matter and energy to exist either. For three-dimensional entities need three-dimensional space to exist in. And this is not too difficult to understand, right? Okay. As a matter of fact, think of this. Think of the amount of space contained inside a 2-liter soda bottle. You with me? Pretty familiar with that. It's basically what we would call, or another way to look at it, is 500 cubic centimeters or cc's of space. Okay, any of you that are maybe into engines, motorcycles, whatnot, 500 cc's, they measure a lot of motorcycles. A lot of cars now are measured, the motors, most of them now, I think, are measured in terms of cubic centimeters, although I know some of them are in inches, but let's not get off track here, or let's not have Mark get off track here, okay? But anyway, getting back, 2-liter soda bottle, right? We obviously, folks, could not fit 4 liters or 1,000 cc's of soda into 500 cubic centimeters, right? I mean, that's pretty straightforward. Again, normal observational awareness. Therefore, if there were hypothetically only a total of 500 cc's of space in existence, can you imagine that? There would be no place for the other 500 cc's of soda, or anything else for that matter, to exist. Now, that's a little crazy to think about, isn't it? We certainly wouldn't have much of a cosmos, would we, if there were only a total of 2 liters of space in existence? And just to carry this thought process out a little further, what if our solar system occupied all the space there was and there was no more space beyond it? If this were the case, there could be no other stars or galaxies or anything else. For there would literally be no place or no space, right, for them to exist in either. And that's kind of interesting to think about also, isn't it? For it would certainly be a dramatically altered reality. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, what we look up and see in the sky at night would be totally different. I mean, it would dramatically impact a lot of different things. And I don't want to get into all of that right now, but really life as we know it probably would not be able to exist for a variety of reasons. But anyway, let's not worry about that right now. It would be a dramatically altered reality. But let's get back to the fact that space is, in actuality, a construct. And consider this a little more closely for a few moments, because it is interesting to do so. And as we have already mentioned, the real space in which the real cosmos exists is actually a construct of the three familiar dimensions that we all know quite well, right? Length and width and height, all right? Therefore, let us briefly consider each of these dimensions one by one, and in particular, their relationship to each other in the structure of space. To begin with, it is interesting to note that even though we begin the construct of space with one dimension, we cannot see only one dimension, for all by itself, it is actually invisible. And without getting too complicated here, if any of you remember any of your basic geometry courses, you'll remember this, okay? We start relationships of space with a point, and then we run a bunch of points together, we get a line. But a line technically with only one dimension is invisible, okay? Because when we add the second dimension, it makes the first dimension visible. All right, now again, I don't want to get too complicated here, but just follow me with what I've written down here in my notes, okay? However, when we add the second dimension, as I just mentioned, space then becomes visible. The easiest way I have found to understand this relationship is to think in terms of a picture. A picture is two-dimensional, right? Although it is flat, we can easily see an image that has both length and width. But can you imagine trying to look at a picture that had length but no width? As I just kind of mentioned, as an aside, if it truly had length only and absolutely no width, we really couldn't see it at all, for it would only be just an extremely skinny, in fact, an infinitely skinny line that would consequently be completely invisible. But with both length and width, we have a two-dimensional image that can easily be seen. However, though a picture can be seen, it cannot be tangibly experienced because it is flat, right? Still possessing only length and width. Also, as we have previously noted, matter, the stuff of the cosmos, cannot inhabit only a two-dimensional realm, for it is three-dimensional. And again, I know there's a lot of very complex theoretical analysis or conjectures about this, but I'm talking about the real world, the real cosmos, which we know, which science can observe. That's the one we're dealing with, and it's three-dimensional, length, width, and height, okay? And everybody knows that. So it is only when we add the third dimension, height, that we get real 3D or three-dimensional space, right? Space that the real cosmos can exist in. As a matter of fact, space that you and I can exist in. I like to think of this as providing the three-dimensional space for the two-dimensional image to actually become real. Or in other words, it's like allowing only a picture of someone to now have the room, the necessary space, right, to actually become the real physical person, right? You with me with that? Okay. Therefore, we could say that the third dimension, in essence, makes the first two experientially real, as we can now actually experience the space and live in it, and it therefore fully completes the construct of space, right? And again, I find, and this is just a little aside, and we're going to talk about this more fully, I find this constant theme, I was noticing this constant theme of threes. I mentioned that in a message a long time ago called our Tri-Universe, but we're going to bring this up again and discuss it more fully in a later message. But I just wanted to make a note of it because it's quite compelling. And I just wanted to mention that because, again, dealing with the three dimensions, it certainly bears this out. And not only that, but what each of the three dimensions do collectively, okay? But for right now, summarizing then, we could say that the first dimension is the beginning reference point of an area or the construct of space, but it is invisible and intangible all by itself. Adding the second dimension makes an area of space visible, but still not complete, as nothing could actually, from the real universe anyway, could actually fit into it. For it is only when we add the third dimension that an area of space finally becomes functionally real, as there is now room for things to actually exist in it, be they things as small as atoms or as large as galaxies. And again, this is real straightforward stuff, but it's interesting to think about on a foundational and a constructional level, okay? Now, I mean, in other words, how this relationship operates. Now, while it is true that space is certainly more intangible than the matter component, the fact that it is still a real construct requires that some type of an explanation be sought for its origin by anyone seeking complete answers for the birth of the cosmos, which of course ties into great question number one, where did I come from, right? Number two, and to bear this out, even the advocates of the Big Bang Theory, rather than simply ignoring or dismissing it, assume that that hypothetical primordial explosion, which they postulate, must have also somehow actually given rise to space as well, for they too know that it must be accounted for. But folks, as we've already learned previously, and honestly know intuitively anyway, all real scientific evidence clearly negates the possibility of any type of order arising from an explosion. Rather, all the empirical evidence states that the development of any type of structure or order can only emerge from the coordinated application of the required conditions of the four P factors, which we've discussed quite a bit right now. But they're important, okay? Therefore, to begin with, I mean, real simple stuff, folks. To begin with, here once again, as with the atom, the initial concept for the design, construction, and maintenance of space had to be developed into some type of plans before it could ever be brought into existence in the first place. And as we also now know from the law of information, plans can only ultimately originate in a mind, which means that here again we are dealing with a someone. Following on from this, then, this someone must have had access to some type of vast power to energize the development of space. Furthermore, as we also saw in the atom, they must have also had the capability to utilize this power to create the specific parts required to construct space, and then finally the process of putting it all together on the enormous scale now containing the entire cosmos, and then of continuing to sustain all this space right up to the present hour, right? Because it's all still here, the cosmos is still here, and so are we, right? And aren't we glad about that? Therefore, the very simple and clear conclusions my studies of space had brought me to were essentially the same as my studies of the atom had, which was this. The only rational, adequate cause for the existence of this second vast cosmic effect, in light of the sturdy laws of the X-frame, was a someone, not blind chance or a something, but a someone, someone with a mind, with an intellect, along with these other enormous capabilities, and one who is on the same order of magnitude as the someone who was responsible for the origin of all the matter in the cosmos. And since it is unnecessary and scientifically inaccurate to postulate two adequate causes when only one is required, it therefore seemed logical to conclude that this someone who was responsible for the origin of matter was indeed the same cause behind the origin of space. So here once again, the sound evidence that I had found from my simple examination of space, the universe's second main component, had only further confirmed what my previous investigation of the atom had, that there has to be a master designer and sustainer of both, who is of such an order of magnitude and capability that we might as well call them God. This, of course, was additionally gratifying to me, right? For as I have previously shared with you, I was hoping at the outset of my great questions quest to find some solid scientific evidence for the existence of God. And I was pleased to find that it was continuing to accumulate in the clear and simple manner that it was. In fact, Yang, I was honestly getting to the point where I was beginning to think that this search to find evidence that God existed might actually be far easier than I had ever anticipated, okay? I mean, my goodness, I had already found, I mean, strong evidence, okay? And of course, all of this was due primarily to an ever-growing analytical discernment my X-frame was empowering me with. The more familiar those laws became to me, and the more thoroughly I integrated them into my thinking, the more clearly I began to see the true nature of the world around me. Everywhere I now looked, I was beginning to catch glimpses of a similar, consistent, repeating theme and pattern that were both intriguing and compelling, and I couldn't wait to explore them further. I mean, folks, I felt like this whole new world was opening up to me, and everywhere I looked, I was getting these patterns. I'd see this, I was applying this X-frame, and my mind was changing the way I was looking at things, and it was blowing my mind, folks, to be frank with you. I could feel my anticipation. I can feel it now. It's pretty awesome, man. It's, this stuff still excites me, folks. It's just, it continues to unfold. It's the most profound thing I've ever done with my life. And I know many of you heard me say that, but I wouldn't be doing this otherwise, trust me, okay? I could feel my anticipation and the momentum building, and I was getting even more excited about this journey of discovery. I was eager to find out what the studies ahead would reveal in the context of the great questions, as what I had learned even thus far had been profoundly significant. I had learned so much, and yet I felt like I was just getting started. And as I would eventually discover, this was indeed the case, for I had barely scratched the surface. It was to be an exciting, in fact, life-changing road ahead. Now, as we wrap up this message, you will recall that as I concluded my prior message, I mentioned that being confronted by the extraordinary extremes of the relative size of space began stirring within me a variety of compelling thoughts, ones not only of additional paradox, but also of present confinement and limitation and isolation and further inadequacy, okay? But I also talked about the fact that there was some potentially amazing aspects of additional enhanced realities, and we're going to get to them. We're going to talk about the first part of this, the inadequacies, in the next part of this message, which is going to be considering space 3, because it is interesting to reflect on them. And then we're going to talk about the possibilities of this someone changing the relationships of space. And folks, it is mind just expanding. It's awesome to think about, and I'm going to look forward to getting into some of that stuff with you. So until then, gang, hang in there, man. Hope you're enjoying the ride. I sure am. This is Marcus D signing off. Until next time, wishing you all a wonderful day. Okay, take care, folks. Bye-bye.